Now, Jewish rapscallion.
I'm not Jewish, I'm a Roman.
Your father was a Roman. What was his name?
Nautius Maximus.
Centurion, do you have anyone of that name in the garrison?
Well, no, sir. It's a joke, sir. Like Silius Sodus or Biggest Dickus, sir.
What's so funny about Biggest Dickus?
Well, it's a joke name, sir.
I have a very great friend in Rome called Biggest Dickus.
Silence!
What is all this insolence? Wait till Biggest Dickus hears of this. Anybody else feel like a little giggle when I mention my friend Biggus Dickus? What about you? Do you find it risible when I say the name Biggus Dickus? He has a wife, you know. You know what she's called? She's called Incontinentia. Incontinentia Buttocks.
Welcome to the after party.
Around a frosted glass of podcast. This is the Bob and Chez Show.
The After Party with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
I fucking thought of that asshole all night last night. I couldn't get that stupid monkey's fucking voice out of my head.
Yeah, and I was concerned going in. I swear to fucking God, I was getting ready, all the show prep and everything, all the crap for the show, and I was thinking, you know, we just did a Dan Bedondi clip 2 weeks ago. Is it too soon? And considering the response we're getting on Thursday's free show, not too soon. Never, never, ever too soon.
You know, I understand where you're coming from. I found myself doing it yesterday on the free show, you know, sort of arguing with the Dan Bedondi who isn't there. Mm-hmm. And I was afraid of that. And I don't want to get into a pissing match with that fucking fat cunt. So, you know, that bothers me a little bit because yeah. I feel like by mentioning him, we're giving him some kind of platform. But, you know, I mean, honestly, it's so funny. You know, if he were like, you know, if he were just some droll moron who was ragging on us or some droll conspiracy theorist and there wasn't like, you know, comedy there, good comedy, yeah. I would say no way.
Yeah.
But dear God, is he funny.
It is funny stuff. And what's so great is he doesn't realize how funny he is.
No, that's the beautiful part of all good, really, really good humor is when somebody is dead serious.
And yeah.
You know, he is you know, he is the room of commentators. He is Tommy Wiseau's the room of, like, political commentary.
Yeah. And it's just, he understands nothing. Grasps nothing.
No.
From the name of our show, all the way down to how many views we get and where he can find them. I mean,
no, he doesn't get a fucking thing. And that's not really that much of a surprise. I mean, and this is a guy who believes absolutely insane things. And, you know, I mean, the sad thing about it is, like, it says so much about social media now.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, it says so much. It says that just, you know, just because there's this arrogance, and we've always said that, you know, that, you know, I've written it, that conspiracy theories is where sort of, you know, idiocy and arrogance mixes. And he believes that because he has a microphone and anybody can now do it, anybody. It used to be, you know, the joke we made about bring back the gatekeepers. It used to be that people with talent were the only ones who could get on the air.
Oh, yeah.
And now he just, you know, he genuinely believes that because he has himself a microphone and he has himself a little BSTV studio and has the potential to be heard by people, that it gives what he has to say some sort of weight.
Yeah. Yeah. And he also, that weight also comes from the fact that I think he honestly believes that Alex Jones is genuine. That Alex Jones is sincere and putting these ideas out there because he actually does have the evidence. He has the documents.
Yeah.
And so therefore, Badandi's thinking, now, why would this guy put his reputation on the line and say all these ludicrous things if they weren't true?
Right.
There's a naivete there that I try not to emphasize too much, because that generates sympathy for Dan Badandi. And Dan Badandi deserves, you know, no sympathy whatsoever.
None at all.
No, no. Definitely not.
Guess what, Baba Jones? You're going to get evil scum.
We're scum. I love being called scum by him.
And you know what? I said it on the free show, and I really mean it, that you could be doing radio, you could be doing podcasting your whole life, and never stumble upon a gold mine for comedy like Dan Badandi.
Absolutely.
I feel like every show needs like a Dan Badandi character. I mean, Howard Stern managed to find dozens of them somehow, because he's fucking Howard Stern, and he's a fucking genius, and he knows how to cultivate weirdos and assemble that whack pack. I mean, Gary the Retard alone. I mean, I haven't heard of the Stern Show in a while, so I don't even know if Gary the Retard is still alive. But I mean, Gary the Retard, just a brilliant discovery by Stern, and they play it so well. They don't put him down because he's mentally challenged. They give him a platform, and then Gary the Retard is Gary the Retard.
Yeah, it's the same thing on when Opie and Anthony were Opie and Anthony and not Opie and Jimmy. They had Bobo. Bobo was this guy who was just really fucking dumb, who was a little sycophantic hanger-on for the show. And they just, you know, they just let him talk, and occasionally they would mercilessly beat up on him, but only because he genuinely was an idiot. But yeah, you absolutely. That's, you know. Yeah.
I mean, and honest to God, I mean, we started out going, you know, I wish this guy would just go away and shut the fuck up because he's saying dangerous, dangerous things. But now I'm at the point where I don't want him to go away. I don't want to shame him off the air. And I don't think he'll ever do that.
Oh, no. That's the beautiful thing about him. And that's the beautiful thing about all of these conspiracy theorist types, is that they're incapable of shame. There's no self-awareness there. There isn't even a fucking thimble full of self-awareness.
It's all certainty. It's 1,000% certainty.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who is not simply talking about sort of national, you know, one world government, police state conspiracy theories. He's a guy who's talking about doves eating seagulls, eating crows, and biblical prophecy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's talking about absolute horseshit.
Right. And to me, the best clip of Dan Badandi is the one in which he goes off about the vibrating dildos.
That is great.
And he totally believes that it's authentic, that this is a real news story. Why? Because it's on InfoWars.
Yeah, and it's not. It's the whole thing was a bullshit story. The entire fucking thing.
That's right. And you know, God bless him. God bless that mental kid. We get we get this out of his dildo thing.
Strap on dildos. Dildo. Dildo. It's a penis. Artificial penis. Dildos. Dildo. Dildo. Damn dildo. Strap on dildos. Dildos.
And then, you know what, I totally forgot to I should have done this as the mini show yesterday. There was the whole Deflategate thing happened, and I think we have a balls supercut from the Deflategate.
Balls. Each team has 12 balls. The balls, the Patriots balls. The selectors balls, ball, Patriots ball, balls. Sack in front of him full of balls. Ball, he inspects the ball, balls, balls, the balls. Balls, 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 ball, balls.
Holy fuck.
It's just, it's an endless fountain, man. You know, and even if there's not something new, I can go back like a year into the archives of truthradioshow.com and just find something great.
Yeah, some little nugget.
And, you know, and thank you to all of our listeners for totally, totally 1,000% getting it. You know, and it's always a roll of the dice when you take a fucking shaved head monkey like Dan Badani and start relentlessly pecking at him, whether or not people are going to start sympathizing with Dan. You know, it's a delicate balance. But everyone fucking gets it. I mean, I'm looking at Twitter right now. We got a guy, highly scatological, made a Venn diagram of Dan's listeners and our listeners. This is just two circles.
Yeah.
It's like the crossover between Dan Badani and the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show listeners. On the right, it just says Bob and Chez's listeners. And on the left is a circle that says Dan's listeners, but it's in like child handwriting. It's like really shitty kid handwriting. God, so a lot of great responses from yesterday's show. Highly Scatological also posted, Da Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show, Epic Dan Badani audio is epic. That is absolutely true. Kenneth tweets, please make, we'll give you a mind job for $6 after party shirts. Scooter Cons writes, your ridicule of Badani is both wicked and relentless. In other words, well done, BNC.
Thank you.
All right, so, well, good. So, Dan, if you're listening, and you're probably not, so I don't even know why I'm saying this, please keep going. Don't ever stop being you. Whoops. I keep hitting the wrong button. I got a new keyboard. There was a keyboard that I ordered.
Oh, that's right. You had a keyboard issue.
I had a keyboard. I wanted to order. There's this very specific type of keyboard that I like to use because the keys are very cushiony and they're silent. So when I trigger all of our sounds here on the show, you don't hear tap right before you hear the sound. It's just a very cushiony, silent keyboard. And so I wanted to get another one, but Office Max was out of stock, this keyboard that I like. So I had to order it. And I ordered it through Amazon. And for some reason, the one they sent was like for Great Britain. So it had all of the Great Britain symbols on there, like the symbol for the pound, like the British pound instead of the dollar sign. And then the at symbol was way down where the quote symbol is supposed to be. And then the shift button on the left was the size of just a single button rather than sort of the shift button should be like a two button width. So you can't miss it as you're going to type a capital letter. I mean, these are all things as writers we rely upon. A good solid keyboard. And this threw me completely off. So lately I've just been, when I go to hit the one, I've been hitting the two for some reason. The one on the one on our buttons corresponds with the ding. See, I could do like number one for the ding. And then number two is our dramatic stinger. So I've just been screwing up all the buttons. All right. Some stuff we want to talk about today. You know what? Before we get into the fun, I got to hit a piece of political news here. And I'm not going to take very long with this, so bear with me. One thing you're going to hear throughout the entire presidential campaign season is that the unemployment rate is bogus because the labor participation rate is at record numbers. Like the labor, everyone's dropping out of the labor force. That's terrible. It's all Obama's fault. And we saw that again today. There was a new set of jobs numbers out today, Friday. And it said that the labor participation, of course, there were 200,000 something jobs created in April. All pretty good news. Except there was this labor participation rate hitting a record number. 93 million people dropped out of the labor force. This is, God, we're in a disaster now here, people. That's what the Republicans are going to be saying. That more and more people are dropping out of the labor force and it's all Obama's fault. Well, it's not. It's, of course, it's not. It's entirely about the baby boomers. There's something like, what's the number? There were a total of 76 million baby boomers born between 1946 and 1964. There are about 65 million who have survived since then. So if you add, what's 1946 plus 65 years? That puts us right around 2010, doesn't it? 2011?
I was told there would be no math on this test.
No.
I know. It's supposed to be the after party.
Absolutely, you have no idea how bad my math is. How no fucking idea.
Oh, I know. I'm just as bad. I mean, I rely upon my calculator all the time. I'm constantly bringing it up just to do simple multiplication sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But suffice to say, I'll just cut to the chase here. As of 2010, 2011, you had baby boomers born in right after World War II starting to retire. There, you imagine 65 million baby boomers. 65 million minus, 96 million is the drop in the labor participation rate?
Right.
Basically, half of all people dropping out of the labor force are baby boomers retiring.
Right.
So to point to this labor participation rate and say, oh my God, this guy's everything's going well, is erroneous. Because it's really, I mean, you want to focus on the other half, not the baby boomers. So you cut that in half because the baby boomers retiring, and it's not that bad. It's not. There are numerous studies. U.S. News and World Report, hardly the liberal bastion of journalism. Aging baby boomers, those Americans born between 1946 and 1964, account for approximately half the drop in the labor force participation rate since 2007, according to a report released Thursday from the White House Council of Economic Advisors. The remaining decline stems from, quote, cyclical factors, fairly typical of historic economic recessions, and more difficult to explain residual factors from the crisis. The participation rate, which is the portion of adults employed or looking for a job, is one of the most puzzling and, for many people, the most misunderstood parts of the labor market. So, that's it. That's it. It's about the baby boomers. So, whenever you hear, well, like the other day during his presidential campaign announcement, the sleeper, Dr. Ben Carson said that, look at the labor participation rate. It's terrible. I'm going to put you all to sleep. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to hypnotize you with some gobbledygook about the labor participation rate. It's a disaster of epic proportions, as you can tell by the tone of my voice. Do I not sound extra urgent today? Are you asleep yet? All right. Sleep. Sleep. The sleeper.
Fucking sucks. Guy's fucking terrible.
He's a fucking... I have never heard anybody quite as boring as Dr. Ben Carson. And that...
He is tedium made flesh.
You know, imagine what he's going to be like after like five dozen of those stump speeches.
Right.
I mean, the campaign announcement should be the most pulse-pounding, energetic of any speech that the guy would give up until like a victory speech in a primary. So between now and next year, he's going to be delivering that exact same speech every day, like 5-6 times a day. I don't know how he's going to have enough time, because it takes him 3 hours to do it. It takes him 3 hours to read 1,000 words.
Yep.
But maybe that's part of his diabolical plan. He's going to put everybody to sleep, hypnotize them into thinking that Ben Carson is right for America. And then his sinister laugh would have to go like this.
Exactly.
I'll get you, Batman.
Yep.
So I just needed to clear that up about the labor participation rate. Okay, so did you see the Avengers? Have you seen the Avengers yet?
I have not seen it yet.
Oh, my God!
I know, I'm sorry, we can't. Well, I mean, the funny thing is I know at least two plot points in it. Mm-hmm. I know what everybody's pissed off about with Black Widow. And I know I have a general idea what happens to Quicksilver. So I know two plot points.
Yeah, I mean, the mistake people are making with the whole Black Widow thing, and I observed that too. I said to my wife after we got back after seeing the movie, I said, you know, it'd be nice to have a female character in one of these movies who isn't just the love interest.
Right.
But I do think that we're expecting too much from our comic book movies. These aren't movies that should be making any sort of groundbreaking statements about...
No, exactly.
...equality or women's roles in films. There are other movies in which to do that. Because, I mean, for every, romantic lead that Scarlett Johansson plays in one of these Avengers Marvel comic universe movies, you got Chris Hemsworth's biceps all over the place, too.
Right.
I mean, don't think that Chris Hemsworth is in these movies because of his remarkable acting chops.
Yeah.
It's because he's a fucking hunk of meat that fits into that Thor costume really well.
Yeah, exactly. He's a great-looking guy, and that's why he's there. And same with Chris Evans, although I think Evans is a pretty good actor. I think it's not fair. I think that that Hemsworth's a good actor,
Well, no, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying they're not.
No. That's, yeah, exactly. He's there because he looks so damn good.
Yeah, and they're willing to put in the effort to train to get to that physical level.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's, you know, if you're looking for lots of substance and social commentary in an Avengers movie, I think you're chalking up the wrong. you're not looking in the right place. But that aside, you know, I thought the movie was pretty damn good, and I think it's getting a bad rap, despite the fact that it's going to be like the highest grossing movie of all time.
Yeah.
I think what you see is a lot of static and noise from the fanboys.
Oh, look, you know what? You're not going to be able to please these people. It's not, you know, they're not going to be. They're never going to be happy. They're just not. I mean, the fanboys are never going to be completely happy. And God knows, I'm sorry, but, you know, the nerd girl feminists are fucking, the feminists especially, the third wave feminists are never happy.
No.
They're just, I get that it's a, you know, that it's a cliche, but guess what? Stereotypes exist for a reason.
Yeah.
Feminists are fucking, those kinds of feminists are fucking joyless.
And while the internet has proved that women do like comic book movies, they do like comic books.
Yeah,
it has been historically a men's only crowd.
Yeah,
I mean it's like going to a Rush concert expecting a lot of chicks there.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't go to a Rush concert expecting to get laid because there aren't going to be any women there. There'll be a dozen in a 6,000 seat arena, but
right.
you're not gonna see a lot of women like jumping for joy because there are certain things that women like and women don't like. Women don't like Geddy Lee's voice. Women typically don't go to comic book stores and buy comics. I'm not saying
there are some that do. I mean, fucking look at, look at Frevely. You know, Jamie's like fucking nerd girl extraordinaire.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, there are obviously exceptions.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons I think she's awesome is because I really like, you know, I like her, in this other... this other really awesome girl, Geek Girl Diva, she calls herself online.
Oh, yeah.
Who I'm friends with, who lives like right around the fucking corner from me, and we still have never met.
Yep.
Like, we talk all the time online. When I say right around the corner, I mean literally, like, you make a fucking right turn outside my apartment, head down Laurel Canyon, and she'll be there in, like, you know, half a mile up the road. But yeah, I mean, those two are good examples of women who fucking love comics and they love, you know, they geek out over shit and it's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that. I love that about them. But I also know that while both of one of the things that I like about both of them, and I would never approach them with the sort of, you know, Amy Dunn cool girl thing, although I do think that both of them are cool. But the fact is, like, neither of them, you know, especially Jamie, Jamie's gone out of her way to say this, neither of them are these screaming, yelling, you know, just pissed off over every little fucking thing kinds of, you know, third wave feminists or identity political warriors, identity politics warriors. And it just, yeah, you know what? It's like I think that since there are a lot of women who like this stuff, there's a responsibility there not to have women just be, you know, fucking pieces of meat or things to be rescued. But dear God, to expect it to, you know, to expect these comic book movies and comic books to totally rewrite the world is just, man, are you going to be disappointed?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's something that I experience firsthand because while my wife goes and sees all of these movies with me, I will often go see them a second time by myself, first of all, and then as I'm following it, and I follow a bunch of different comic book movie websites. I look at superherohype.com, I look at comicbookmovie.com, I occasionally look at comicbook.com, although it's not very reliable, but suffice to say, I'm always on these websites. It's this great diversion, covering politics all day. It's nice to unwind and look at shit that doesn't matter. And so I look at shit that doesn't matter, and I was, oh, cool, fuck, look at the fucking new Ben Affleck Batman suit. This looks great. And I'll take my iPad, I'll be sitting there on the couch, and I take my iPad, look at the new Batman suit, honey. And I hold it up, and she doesn't even look at the Batman suit. She looks at me with this, you know, this side eye, and, right. and just trying desperately not to laugh in my face, saying, you fucking nerd! Yeah. And, you know, I know that. I understand that, and I own it, and I accept it. But that's just the way, that's just kind of the way things are. It's like expecting men to be all kinds of enthusiastic about a rom-com or about... you know, something on the Oxygen Network or on the Hallmark Channel,
right?
Or something
and like. And by no means, I'm not offering a disclaimer here. By no means are all women or all men like that.
Oh, of course.
By no fucking means. And I never approach women with this attitude that you know, she really likes rom coms and oh, you know. But yeah, you know what? There's a reason stereotypes exist. So there are enough women who like this certain thing, and there are enough men who like this other certain thing that stereotype has developed over the years.
And all of that said, you know, I really thought the Avengers had the one thing that Age of Ultron had that the original movie didn't have much of was heart. There was a shitload of heart in the Age of Ultron film.
Good.
That I was really impressed by. I was, you know, I was actually sad when one of the characters was killed. I'm not going to say which character it was because you haven't seen the movie yet. But, you know, it was sad to see that. And
right. Well, I mean, it's the same thing. That was how I felt with, you know, that's why I loved Guardians of the Galaxy so much. Mm-hmm. Was because it was everything the Avengers was with a shitload of heart.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I was hoping for. As far as taking the Avengers story to the next level, because it's very easy to do a story where, okay, here's the villain of the week. We're going to go after the terrible villain who's inflicting Armageddon on the world, and we're going to defeat him. Well, that we've seen that movie over and over again. It was in the Guardians of the Galaxy. It was in the original Avengers movie. It's in basically all of these comic book movies. There's some evil supervillain who's going to take over the world.
Right.
But a movie needs more than that. And I think where Joss Whedon delivered in Age of Ultron was giving us more than that, was expanding on Bruce Banner, Hulk, and that sort of his relationship to the other Avengers, bringing in additional characters and just doing more with the film. Right. I was really impressed by that. And then, you know,
yeah, I am not surprised one bit that Whedon killed somebody off. I mean, he's legendary for that. He's legendary for killing off characters that you care about.
Yeah. Yeah. Is he losing his spadoinkle or something? What's going on with Joss Whedon these days?
Whedon has this, you know, this movie just ate him up because there was such a process. It was so long. There was so much, from what I hear, there was a lot of interference from the studio.
Yeah.
You know, and there was so much, quite frankly, there was so much pressure on him to get it right, to follow up, you know, one of the biggest movies ever. And you know, the expectations were really, really rough on him. And, yeah, and you know what? And then when he did, you know, he'll say, of course he's going to fucking say that the negative feedback doesn't bother him. There's no way in hell he's going to come out and say, yeah, you know what, fuck those feminists. Because this is a guy who's created, you know, some of the strongest female characters in all of popular culture.
Yeah.
And this is a guy who has made his liberal bona fides clear, 100% clear, you know, and they're still, here are these people, because of what happens with a fictional character, you know, here are these fucking hundreds of people ganging up on him and, you know, being a dick. And, you know, and he just shut it down. He shut fucking Twitter off, which I don't blame him for. And whether it was because of these people who were responding so negatively or because Twitter is just noise and they're a part of it, and he's just like, you know, I don't have a movie to promote anymore. I think that's kind of what he said when he sort of dropped off Twitter. I'm not sure he's ever deleted his account like he did this time, but I know he dropped off Twitter once before. And he said, he's like, you know, this is, you know, unless I have a movie to promote or I have something really stellar I have to say, there's just no reason to be on there. It's a distraction from everything I need to do. And, you know, the thing about Twitter, man, Twitter, you know, Twitter's instant the democratization of everyone, of media, of people being able to speak to each other, that turns it into sort of, you know, a bunch of little assholes, thousands and millions of little assholes vying for the time of somebody who, quite frankly, has no need to put up with it.
Oh, sure.
You know, thinking, you know, block me. There's little juvenile challenges. I hated your last movie. Block me. You know, over and over. That guy's got to get a fucking 1,000 tweets a minute.
Oh, yeah.
Aimed in his direction.
Yeah, I mean, what is it like to have, like, a million followers on Twitter?
And he's like... You know, he would never say it because he's Joss Whedon and he's a fucking good guy. But like when I wrote about it this week, I'm like, my attitude is he's Joss Whedon. Yeah. He has no fucking – fuck you. He owes you nothing.
That's right.
He doesn't owe you a goddamn thing. You know what? He made a fucking movie. You don't like it? Fine. Go talk with it amongst your friends. Shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Leave him alone. You know, if you think that you know, you should be the part how he needs to answer to you – honestly, fuck you. He's going to sit up in his home in the Hollywood Hills fanning himself with money.
And, you know, far be it from me to pull punches when it comes to criticizing a popular movie, because I've done it before, as I'm sure you know.
I'm familiar.
Boyhood. But with this movie in particular, there is, and I see this happening with a lot of different things. It's not just reserved for Age of Ultron. I see it happening a lot, especially on Twitter, is not criticism, but unfair criticism.
Of course. And I think unfair criticism and just noise.
Yeah.
Just how dare you? Fuck you. And then you compound that with I'm sorry, but you know, I know it's my personal soapbox, but it's totally true. You compound that with sort of the millennial activist Tumblr/ Twitter brigade who have who have ists for everything. You're a misogynist, ageist, yeah. That kind of, you know, all that bullshit, all that fucking just crap. And they just pound him over and over with it.
Did you at one point you compiled a bunch of the tweets, didn't you?
No, somebody else did. Oh, okay. And I put it up. You know, somebody did a great job of two people I saw. One of them made a collage out of it. They took his one tweet saying goodbye, like, you know, thanks for everybody who's been terrific on this, and just surrounded them with all of these people telling him, you know, fuck you, block me, you know, how could you, you call yourself a feminist, you misogynist, and, you know, and then another person created a, like, you know, a book, like an online little yeah. slideshow that you click through, and he tweeted it out, and you just go tweet by tweet. And it's just venom like you would vitriol like you would not believe.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking of a couple of the criticisms specifically. Like, first of all, the one about Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, and then the other was,
I don't understand why Ultron is evil. How did he become suddenly evil? Isn't he just Jarvis?
As I want to say, you know what? Shut the fuck up with your fucking right. observations, because you clearly have not watched the movie.
Yeah,
I mean, it was abundantly clear to me. I'm going, what? It's like reading Dan Bedani. It's like reading conspiracy theorist posts on Twitter. It makes no fucking sense whatsoever.
You know what it is? I've lived in New York City and Los Angeles. I have met face to face. I've seen, and I met face to face a bunch of famous people. Mm. A bunch of fucking famous people. You know. Dear God, like a couple months ago, a couple months ago, we were, Taryn and I went to have dinner at Son of a Gun on 3rd here, and sitting like literally right next to me, like her arm brushing against me was Olivia Wilde, and next to her was Sudeikis.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, right there at the bar.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have, even when I met famous people, it's always been like, hey man, what's up? You know, hey, it's good to meet you. You know, that kind of thing. I just never been a fawning, like, hey, I've got questions for you. Or, hey, oh my God, it's so, oh, can I take a picture with you? Like, I've never been that type of person ever with anybody. and maybe that is what carries over with me to Twitter. Like, I try to treat my online interactions as the same thing that the same way I would treat someone in the real world. And because of that, I would never just start fucking hounding Joss Whedon for, you know, with pounding him with questions and hounding him for, I didn't like what you did, blah, 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 you know. No, no. Unless he writes to me, I'm not going to fucking bother him.
Yeah.
Why would I possibly do? I don't like something he's done. Guess what I do? Maybe I'll write something. Maybe I'll bitch to somebody else. I did. I wrote a piece about how I didn't like what he said on Twitter. But I didn't, I didn't loop him in and try to drag him into a fight.
That's right. That's right. And Neil Peart always talks about that from Rush, the drummer from Rush. He's very guarded about his private life and is just mortified. He doesn't interact with fans a whole lot. He likes to go around as anonymously as possible. But he talks about, the time when a Rush fan showed up at his doorstep, found out where he lived, showed up at his doorstep, knocked on his door. I said, you know what? I love The Who. I would never imagine as a kid like driving to Keith Moon's house and knocking on his fucking door.
Yeah, I would never do exactly. I would never do that. And again, I've come face to face with people, a ton of them. Mm-hmm. I mean, holy shit. If someone engages me, or if there's an opportunity for if there's a conversation that we're both staring at the same fucking thing, then fine. That's happened a few times. Where honestly, kind of organically, a conversation starts. Fine, terrific, and it's never a, oh my god, you're this, you're that. Never. It's just you're just a fucking person.
Yeah.
You're a person. You here. Here's your private life. I'm not going to hassle you, and that's it.
One other quick observation about the Avengers before we move on. I don't want to. After seeing that movie, I don't want to hear any fanboys complaining about the city destruction and Man of Steel anymore. Because there's a buttload. I mean, this put Man of Steel. Man of Steel gets criticized a lot because of...
Well, I heard that the difference with Ultron is that they go like if you saw Guardians, you noticed it. Mm-hmm. You noticed that they made a huge point to say we're evacuating the city.
Yeah,
and from what I've heard is that. I read an entire piece actually that said that Avengers learned from the criticism that it got, learned from the criticism that Man of Steel got, and even in the first movie they attempted to save people. Mm-hmm. as the Chitauri were coming down through the hole. But I heard, I don't know, maybe you can tell me, but or maybe not tell me so I can find out for myself. But then in this movie you see them going out of their way as superheroes to save innocents.
Yeah, and I don't want to go through the whole I don't want to go down the wormhole of DC versus Marvel. I'm not really. I love all of the movies. I love I really really like Man of Steel. I of course love the Dark Knight trilogy, which is a different universe, but still, it's the same series of Warner Brothers DC movies. And I also love all of the Marvel movies, save for... I haven't seen the Thor movies. I haven't seen the standalone
movies. They're good. But the second one is... they're both good. I mean, it's fucking... Somebody made a terrific point, which is what they're doing to Marvel now is they're giving over their movies to people instead of just, hey, here's hack director number three who's going to come in and continue the series. They're giving their movies over to real auteurs,
yeah,
real visionaries. Because if you saw Iron Man 3, did you see Iron Man 3?
Yeah, oh, of course.
Iron Man 3 is a fucking Shane Black movie all the way.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's a great movie.
All of his little hallmarks. It's Christmas. It's, there's all this repartee. There's so many hallmarks of a Shane Black movie in that movie.
Yep.
And I like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just in terms of the city destruction between, let's compare and contrast between Man of Steel and Age of Ultron. There was only one city where they made a conscious decision to evacuate the city, and that was the city in the end, which god I wish I could say, I don't want to spoil it for you what actually happens to the city, but there are several other battles that take place in cities where there's no evacuation whatsoever. However, during the and there's been plenty of video of this in the trailers and certainly screen captures and still photos of this all over the internet. And so it's no secret that that Iron Man gets geared up in his Hulkbuster
armor. Yeah, the Hulkbuster.
Yeah,
armor.
Yeah, and fights the Hulk after the Hulk just fucking goes on this great rampage.
Right, throughout Scarlet Witch has infected him.
Yeah, yeah. So he's extra angry, and so he's raging through this city, destroying. No evacuations or anything like that. But there is one scene where they're flying around in midair. The Hulkbuster and the Hulk and Tony Stark, sees a building under construction and he checks with Jarvis to see if there's any population in the building before he sends the Hulk like careening down into the building. So that was, I think, a slight distinction. But I also want to underscore that I watched Man of Steel again, I don't know, a couple of months ago. And right. I noticed there was only one building that actually collapsed because of Superman fighting Zod. Right. All of the other building destruction took place because of the world engine.
Right.
So they really, I mean, to blame Superman for all of that destruction is actually something interesting that they're going to be incorporating into Batman versus Superman. Which
of
is now the aftermath and the reaction to all of that destruction. Is this a good guy? Should we trust him? He's an alien, or is he a savior? Is he a messiah? You know, is he this almost cult-like religious figure? We don't know how to actually treat this character.
I have to admit that I really enjoy the that idea because, you know, again, my soapbox is that being where we are with the media, we can't agree on anything. We can't agree on a fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, you know what? The days of, like, in the 50s, if Superman came down, America would be like, oh, yeah, just rally around. We're rallying around Superman. You know, and now it would be like, you know, Dan Bidondi would have a whole show about him.
Oh, he's part of the Illuminati.
The Illuminati, that's exactly. He's the Illuminati.
Superman came down from Krypton.
Krypton.
Why is Superman from Krypton? I don't understand. It's a hoax, folks. I gotta tell you, it's a hoax.
He would pronounce it Krapton. You know that. You Krapton. Just know it. It's a Krapton.
I came down from Krapton, and I think Krapton's full of doofuses and dorks and retards. And of course, I know some people who are from Krapton, and I don't mean all people from Krapton, but there are countless people from Krapton.
Yeah,
countless. That was my favorite part. Going back to that audio, that was my favorite part
if we could get away with those T-shirts, that would be so awesome. Countless. Could never get away with a shirt like that, but God, that'd be great.
Cuntless.
I got a T-shirt at the Faith No More show.
Yeah.
A week ago, and I got the shirt that's just it's MOT. Oh my God, I can't fucking remember. It says mother on the front and then fucker on the back.
It has the word fucker. It doesn't.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, but it's spelled out in sort of blocks so that, but it's awesome. And yeah. And I'm like, oh, I got to get that. That's completely awesome.
You know, those stickers that you used to see around with like Andre the Giant, sort of a stylized Andre the Giant
Obey.
Face. On
yeah.
That.
Obey. It's Shepherd Fairey.
Yeah. Shepherd Fairey. I was thinking about doing a T-shirt to replace the Nyatenhu shirts, which we were supposed to only do for a limited time, but I just got lazy and left it up there. But I was going to do one that said, God bless that mental kid, and then have like a stylized Bidondi head, like the Andre the Giant. Like, so it's not literally like a photograph of him. I don't think we can do that. I don't think
you can. It's his image. We'll get sued.
Yeah.
He will sue, and he'll probably have pretty good cause.
So
Nyatenhu we can get away with because there's nobody in the fucking world would uphold that.
Yeah.
If we use even a stylized, well, I mean, you know, the stylized because, version of somebody's image for parody is not, you know, it's not out of the question. I mean, I have a friend of mine who's a really good entertainment attorney who deals with this kind of thing. We could probably get away from it from the point of view of satire. In fact, we probably could, but we would get sued. We'd have to go through that trouble.
Yeah, no. I mean, even though we do have Bo Bowen in our corner, I don't want to go to a lawsuit situation with fucking Dan Bidondi.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did, back around 2000, 2001, I did sell Napster Bad T-shirts with my cartoon versions of James Hetfield and Lars Ulrich on there.
Right.
But I don't think they had the balls to sue me because they were already in a PR nightmare because of their lawsuit against Napster.
Exactly.
So they weren't ready to go down that road again.
Exactly. Right message, wrong messengers.
Exactly. But I still might do the God bless that mental kid as the next slogan.
That might be good.
I'm just trying to think of another good one. And, you know, I keep going back to cuntless. But cuntless with an asterisk instead of the U.
That might be fun.
I don't know anyone that would walk around with a cuntless T-shirt.
I would, but that's me.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
All right. All right.
Plus, well, I live in LA. I can get away with it. It's not like, you know, it's like being in New York. My attitude when I was in New York was always like, you know, it was the Joker from the 1989 Batman. Decent people shouldn't live here.
Right. Before we drop the whole Marvel topic, they announced the Captain America Civil War.
It's fucking cast. Everybody. It's everybody.
Everybody's
that may be that while I loved Winter Soldier, loved it, that could very well be the turning point movie. That's a lot of fucking people to cram in there, and that's enough to make people tired of Marvel movies.
Yeah, and you know what? They might also try to cram Spider-Man in here.
Yeah.
Because they've got the new Spider-Man deal, and they wanted to get Spider-Man into Age of Ultron.
Right.
But it was too late. And so Joss Whedon was like, can we get Spider-Man for Age of Ultron? And the deal was delayed and delayed and delayed, the deal with Sony. And then when they finally closed the deal, Age of Ultron was already locked. So Whedon was like, fuck you, people. God damn it. The fucking movie's locked. I can't put it in there. I wish I could, but it's locked. So May 6, 2016 will be Captain America Civil War. It's directed by the Russo brothers from a screenplay by Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely, who also did Winter Soldier and The First Avenger. The film returns Chris Evans as Captain America, Steve Rogers, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, Tony Stark, Scarlett Johansson as Black Widow, Sebastian Stan as Bucky Barnes from Winter Soldier. Well, he was just a normal guy in the first movie.
In the first movie, yes.
Yeah.
Second movie, he was Winter Soldier.
Anthony Mackie as Falcon. Paul Bettany as the Vision, who I thought was great. I really liked the Vision in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Jeremy Renner as also known as Ches Pazienza as Hawkeye.
yeah, you know, fucking Taryn does it to me all the time. She's like the press has really turned against you. I'm like, what do you mean? She says, you called Black Widow a slut. I'm like, oh, you know, she is a slut.
I was like, guys, watch Hawkeye in that movie. And, you know, you get to see Hawkeye's family. You get to go back to Hawkeye's house. And, oh, that's kind of a spoiler. Shit.
Don't tell me anymore, but I get
it. Okay, all right. So Hawkeye's back. Don Cheadle is going to be back as War Machine. Elizabeth Olsen as Scarlet Witch.
Yeah. Elizabeth Olsen. Fuck, I love Elizabeth Olsen. The idea that she's like an Olsen sister is just shocking to me.
Yeah, yeah.
She was so shockingly good in Old Boy, which was not really a very good movie. As a remake, it wasn't terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I think it got a little bit more shit than it deserved, although there's really no excuse. There's no reason to remake that movie, but she was good in it.
Oh, but wait, there's more. Paul Rudd.
Oh, I know, there's more, right. Everybody's in it.
Paul Rudd as Ant-Man is going to be in it.
Come on, enough.
Let's see, Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther. Emily Van de Kamp as Agent 13. Daniel Brühl is in there. Frank Grillo. He's going to be in there as Crossbones. William Hurt's going to be back as General Ross, Thunderbolt Ross.
Martin Freeman's in there.
Jesus
Christ.
Google
Baggins.
Yeah, I mean, I keep reading this. I keep expecting to see my name pop up. I'm going to be in there, too. I didn't even know.
Right.
Everyone's in it.
Exactly.
Dan Bedondi is in this.
Seth himself.
Ben Carson as the Sleeper.
And Robbie Benson as the Lord.
So this is basically like Age of Ultron 2.0 or something. This is basically an Age of Ultron sequel.
Yeah.
It's basically an Avengers movie. All right. So, meanwhile, I saw this in the movie category, strangely enough. Mike Huckabee. Where am I? Did I lose this story? I've got it here somewhere. Oh, shit. I must have closed the... Oh, no, here it is. Here it is. Mike Huckabee once preached against booze, sex, and Monty Python. So I played the Life of Brian clip at the top about Biggest Dickus. And so
he used to come across as like, yeah, you know what? You don't agree with a lot of what he says, you know, a little too Christian for me, but otherwise a pretty, you know, seemingly at least a pretty likable guy.
Yeah.
And he has revealed himself to be just this evil prick, just this fucking asshole who doesn't like anything.
He gets away with all this shit though because he's got that Jim Neighbors grin,
the corn pone bullshit.
Yeah, But he says such evil, heinous things. And he goes, well, you know, I'm just a good guy. Just a good guy looking out for the God and gravies and the guns and
yep.
the goobers and whatever the fuck yeah. the book yeah, title exactly. is. Yeah. So back in 1979, he did a sermon where he said, there was a time in this country when a movie like The Life of Brian, which I just read, thank God, the theaters in Little Rock decided not to show. But it's showing all over Fort Worth, Dallas area, which is a mockery, which is a blasphemy against the very name of Jesus Christ. And I can remember a day, even as young as I am, when that would not have happened in this country or in this or in a city in the South. But friend, it's happening all over and no one's blinking an eye. And we talk about...
I remember a time when the Constitution was completely invalid.
That's right.
I was in this country in 1527 before anybody got here, or before, you know, right after people got here.
Freedom of speech was okay, except for the pythons. That's right there in the First Amendment.
Yes.
But friend, it's happening all over, and no one's blinking an eye, and we can talk about how the devil's moved in, and the devil's moved in, but what's really happened is God's people have moved out and made room for it. We put up the for sale sign, and we've announced a very cheap price for what our lives really are. We've sold our character. We've sold our convictions. We've compromised. We've sold out. And as a result, we've moved out. The devil's moved in, and he's set up shop. And friends, he's preying on your own craving for pleasure. What year was this? 1979.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, this is, you know, this is right about... the start of the backwards masking, rock music is bad, yeah. and just all of that fucking lunatic shit. You know, be afraid of Monty Python, this devil shit and that. Be afraid of Wasp, because, you know, God knows Wasp, God knows a Wasp record will really fuck you over.
I mean, we know that Life of Brian is a parody of... the New Testament and the life of Jesus.
Right. Which is funny, which is what makes it so good.
Which is right. But the fact of the matter is that Brian is not the Messiah. He's mistaken for the Messiah. There is actually a Jesus character in the movie.
Yeah.
And they just don't understand. They didn't. You know, it's like relitigating the past, but certainly Mike Huckabee was right there with all of the fucking hysterics freaking out. You know, there's some towns in Scotland where the movie is still banned, where you still can't see it.
Ridiculous. It's just remarkable. Ridiculous. You know, my band, the band I was in college and beyond, went on tour. And we were playing in D.C. right about the time that all the protests were happening over The Last Temptation of Christ.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And so we have this, I still have it somewhere, this classic picture of our lead singer kind of doing the little sort of smirky emoticon with the smirky smile with sort of arms up like, well,
yeah,
you know, that look. Well, I don't even know how to describe that. We have a picture of him basically doing that in front of a shitload of protesters who were standing out, who were chanting in front of this theater in like Chevy Chase with, they've got like one guy has a giant cross he's carrying around. It's complete batshit lunacy.
Look, if you're, you know, and I don't make it a habit of criticizing religious people, at least to the same degree that like you or Luciano does. But look, if your faith is so utterly threatened by a movie or a comedy, you kind of need to work on your faith a little bit. Don't you think? Don't you think you need to hone and tune and maybe strengthen that faith a little bit more so it's not so fucking threatened by a work of fiction?
Right.
I'm just my advice from a former Catholic to you, the faithful. Just maybe think about working on that. All right, so moving on to some television here. It's been fucking an outstanding week for television, except for one thing, and we'll get to that one thing in a second. First, I want to talk about last night's Louis was goddamn brilliant. If you haven't seen it yet, find it on your DVR, or find it on demand or something. But last night's Louis was so fucking funny and so fucking insightful. I am still thinking about it. The story is basically Louis goes over to pick up his daughter from a sleepover. And the mom of the daughter's friend wants Louis to move a fish tank. this enormous, like, 30-gallon fish tank. And Louie's like, I don't even know you. I can't move this fish. I have to drain it and then move all the fish out. And it's just a big, I've never met you before. Why am I doing this? And the mom just starts crying, starts just bawling hysterically. Like, she's overloaded, clearly, with lots of other emotional baggage. And so Louie just sort of puts a blanket over her head and then wanders out of the room. That night, he starts having these heinous nightmares. And the nightmares are so fucking genius, so brilliantly choreographed, and so insightful in terms of actually how nightmares work. How not just nightmares, but weird dreams. Have you ever just had weird dreams that bizarre things happen? You know, there's, to me,
as a matter of fact, it's one of the reasons I love sleeping so much. I love my dreams. They're all very bizarre.
Yeah, see, I mean, I have three categories of dreams. I have dreams that seem normal. It's just like normal stuff going on. And then there's a middle category of weird dreams where normal stuff happens and then it transforms into weird shit. And then there's the nightmares. And thank fucking God I don't have a whole lot of nightmares. But the way Louis played out, and of course he's the writer, director, basically the editor of this show, so it's really all him. The way these dreams played out were so fucking genius. There was one scene that I completely related to, and this kind of recalls our discussion last week about radio, which is that he had this one dream where he goes up on stage and he can't speak. He can't articulate his words. So in this dream, Louis's on stage and all he can say is self and and it was so, I laughed the laugh of all laughs. That was so fucking funny because I've had that dream so many times where I'm in a radio studio. In fact, I was DMing back and forth with Rocky Mountain Mike from the Stephanie Miller Show about this. And we were talking about how we still have those dreams. It's been years since I did live radio, but we still have those dreams where we're in a radio studio, we're on the air, and nothing works, and everything is in slow motion, and you can't speak.
Oh yeah, everyone has those dreams about their job. Everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dream, my recurring dream. First of all, recurring dreams. I always have dreams about ships. I'm sure that means something. Usually cruise ships, but yeah, I have a lot of dreams about
that's
ships,
weird.
About boats, about being on ships, which is really weird. But my constant, you know, recurring dream when I was a TV news producer, and I will still have it occasionally, like you said, is starting my show and realizing that, like, I've got an hour-long show and I only have enough material for 15 minutes, 20
yes,
minutes.
Yes.
Like, I haven't put the show together in time. I haven't put it together. I have those kinds of dreams. I actually, now that I think about it, I still have those kinds of dreams all the time.
Yeah.
Where my show isn't finished. And I'm like, what the fuck am I going to do for the next, you know, 40 minutes, half hour?
That's right. I have that dream maybe once a month where I'm about to go on the air. I don't have any news copy written. I don't have my commercial car. And, of course, my dreams always take place with, like, 1990s era radio technology. So I don't have all the cartridges and CDs pulled for the show. So I'm like, I got to get the things, but I'm so sleepy. Oh, my God, I have to go on the air. And I press the button to open the mic, and I go, yeah, I basically go, selvin. God damn it. And it's
the inability to do your job. That's job pressure.
Yeah.
Or it's the feeling of inadequacy. Absolutely.
But I think in your case and in my case, I think there's an extra pressure because what you're doing is live television or live radio. Yeah. And so you're not only performing for your colleagues at work, you also have to perform for thousands of people listening to the radio. So there's that extra intensity and the extra pressure that goes along with that sort of thing. And of course it was perfectly illustrated with Louis last night where he's talking in front of the Comedy Cellar crowd there and not able to articulate any words. And so I'm not going to spoil how everything ends, but the whole episode is just Louis having all of these weird dreams. Charles Grodin was back in last night's episode, by the way. It's really fucking funny in that show. He's the doctor with the three-legged dog. There was some question that Louis once asked about the three-legged dog. Is your dog okay with just three legs? And Charles Grodin says, three legs are enough. Really? He can still walk with three legs, so what's the big deal? But anyway, so that was really good television, Louis last night. And then Mad Men, I've got to stand corrected. I mean, I was really panning Mad Men at the beginning of this season, and it's really grown into just what it should be, which is a really fucking great show. It was a great show for Peggy. It was a great show for Don. And I really can see, thinking back to some of the elements of the first season, how they really are wrapping things up. They are bringing some things full circle. And thank fucking God for it, because I was really getting worried that it was just going to be one of these meandering things where they weren't going to wrap up a goddamn thing about it. Right. So good for Weiner and the entire cast and crew of Mad Men for bringing that around, because Jesus Christ, I was really worried. Meanwhile, Stephen Colbert fucking rules the world. Stephen Colbert noticed a series of teacher grant requests in South Carolina and decided to actually 100% fulfill all those grant requests from teachers in South Carolina to the tune of $800,000 of his own money.
Wow, that's awesome.
That is pretty fucking great. Stephen Colbert, I mean, of course, he's making more money than God now with the Late Show deal. I would say, I don't know what his deal is worth, but I remember when Letterman first went over to Late Show, Letterman was pulling down $14 million, and that was in 1994 money.
Yeah.
So Stephen Colbert's got to be in that range somewhere. But the story goes, for nearly a decade, Stephen Colbert sat at a desk to dish out his own brand of truthiness. Now he's using the money raised from auctioning that desk to help fulfill every grant request made by South Carolina public school teachers on the crowdfunding site DonorsChoose.org. The donation of $800,000 will fund nearly 1,000 projects in more than 375 schools. More than 800 teachers from the state have projects on the site. Enjoy the learning, South Carolina, Colbert said Thursday to teachers and students assembled at Alexander Elementary School in Greenville, South Carolina. His remarks, made from New York via live video feed, were captured by the Greenville News. The contribution includes the proceeds from the Colbert Report's sets auction and matching funds from Share Fair Nation and ScanSource. So it wasn't even really like his salary money. He just auctioned off this stuff, handed the money over for the... I mean, he could have walked away with it.
Right.
Could have walked away with it, but fucking, you know, that's really great. I mean, that's super generous, and you know, just makes me admire Stephen Colbert even more. And then, you know, it's funny, we were talking last night, my wife and I, about Letterman leaving and about Late Show, and only after I saw this story did I remember, oh fuck, we're gonna get Stephen Colbert again coming in what is it, August, September?
Yeah.
That's fucking great. It sort of ameliorated any sadness I was having because of Letterman going away, which I think is next week, isn't it? Isn't next week his last show?
10 days away, I think.
Oh. So it's right in the middle of, strategically enough, right in the middle of May sweeps.
Of course.
And already...
You knew that was going to happen.
Jimmy Kimmel decided to stand down. Jimmy Kimmel will not be airing a live show that night.
Yep, which I think is unbelievably classy of him.
I wonder if Fallon's going to follow suit. What do you think?
Of course not.
Of course not.
No.
So let's talk about Jimmy Fallon.
Fuck Jimmy Fallon. Fuck Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, and that fucking bit is
just
all over.
You know what, Bob? You know what, actually? You know what really takes me from a point of really just disliking his stupid shtick? And the fact that I don't believe he has much in the way of real comedic – well, no comedic talent. You know, I can sing fine and do impressions, but that's about all he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always felt that way about him, that he sucks as a performer and that I can't stand the sort of viral shtick bullshit that he does.
Yeah.
But I really – that got elevated to an absolute loathe of him this past week when I had never read – Tina Fey's Bossy Pants. I haven't read it yet, and I'd like to. But I heard about a passage from it, a scene from it, where during Saturday Night Live, Amy Poehler, who I think it was relatively new at that time, was rehearsing kind of a really vulgar joke. So she's sitting there kind of telling this vulgar joke. And Fallon walks over to her and says, stop doing that. It's not cute. I don't like it. And
what a dick.
Poehler looks at him and just says, I don't literally, she says, I don't fucking care if you like it.
Good for her.
Yeah, but that's what that he's always he's been
gotta,
this way.
Yeah, he's got to stick his fucking goofy face in the middle of everything.
Yeah, that's him. He, you know, everything has to be inoffensive and cutesy, and yeah, and he thinks that that's like that is he has the right to tell other people whether or not to be funny. In much the same way that, you know, when I first wrote about him, when I wrote, you know, I think he kind of sucks. Was when he had, what the hell's her name, Shailene Woodley, mm-hmm. on his show. And he asked her a question about Hollywood sort of pitting women against each other. And she gave, instead of giving a fun, oh, well, you know, I'm used to that, da, 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 you know, she gave a real answer where she's like, well, look, I think it sucks. I think that, you know, people saying that, you know, people trying to pit young actresses against each other is horrific. It's wrong. And yeah, and they cut that out. You know, Fallon had Fallon. I would imagine Fallon did it himself. Had them cut that out, cut the scene out.
Yeah,
and it's just like fuck you, dude. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Yeah, and you know what? On one hand, he's a dick, but I wonder on the other hand if it's not really about his audience too that pisses us off that his audience eats this up. Yeah. It's not just that he's putting out hacky, unfunny, not even attempting to be funny shtick.
Viral shit.
It's viral.
He plays and, fucking games.
And,
that's it.
And people eat it up, though. And so it's like a chicken and the egg kind of conundrum. Where is it? Should we blame entirely Jimmy Fallon, or should we blame? Should a lion's share of the blame go to the people who just fucking love it? And we saw them in the comments on Facebook. Can we answer? You know, yeah. I mean, sue me. I loved it. I thought it was hysterical. But I looked at that thing. I looked at it a couple of times. This is the extreme more than words parody we're talking about.
Yeah, the shot for shot parody.
Yeah. Which is just, it's fucking masturbation is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, it might as well have just been
again,
like.
It's fucking Jimmy Fallon singing because he can't help but do that.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it's Jack Black being Jack Black.
Right. Which is just, I had enough of that after seeing School of Rock. Yeah, 15
School
years
of Rock
ago.
Was fantastic.
School of Rock is great.
The shtick he's done over and over and over since, and trust me, I know. I saw him live. He, you know, Tenacious D, and I like Tenacious D, but mm-hmm. Tenacious D came out with Foo Fighters for that big Dave mm-hmm. Grohl's birthday show that I went to at the Forum a couple months back, and you know, and it's just it's the fucking black thing. And I'm just like, oh, dude, no. No.
Yeah, it's just doing the mugging and the over the top rock kind of rock god performance.
Yeah,
it's the same stuff over and over again. So it was like it was really like hackiness on top of hackiness. There was no, I mean, satire to me. Satire is strictly commenting on something else, either seriously or comedically. Right. And there was nothing satirical about this. This was just them copying the video and then tossing in some 15 years ago outdated Jack Black shtick on top
of
it.
Yeah, it's all it is nostalgia.
Yeah.
All fucking Fallon does is game shows and nostalgia. You know, it's like I said in the piece that I wrote this week, it's like it is literally your reaction to that literally is, hey, I'm aware that that thing existed. And I happen to be fond of that time period in which it existed. That's it. That's the only reaction it's supposed to provoke. And you compare that to that article that came out in New York this week in which a shitload of Dave Letterman's past writers ran down sketches and ideas that didn't make it to air.
Yeah.
And they were fucking every one of those sketches, the sketches that didn't make air were brilliant.
Yep. Yep.
Brilliant. It's and Fallon is just... I'm just going to pretend that I'm extreme.
Thank fucking God for Kimmel and Colbert,
yeah.
who are just going to rescue the fuck out of late night from the clutches of people like Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah.
Don't know. Jimmy Fallon's bits are the highly produced television versions of like Viral Nova and the fucking
exactly.
clickbait
that's what
shit
I said. I'm like his writers are from Thought Catalog, and Jimmy Fallon is basically he's a video version of BuzzFeed or Viral Nova. And you know, when I was writing it, I was trying to come up with a good example. And I think I said it's they're viral clips with a brand attached to it. But that's it. That's exactly what I was going for. I was going for all they are really is they're not even Funny or Die clips, because Funny or Die clips are actually funny. They're viral Nova clips. Yep. They're, you know, here, share this shit.
Yeah, hey, do you remember He-Man and the Masters of the Universe?
Yep.
Thumbs that's up it. If you do.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. That's all up. It is.
Oh, my God.
You know, oh my God, Jimmy Fallon got the cast of Saved by the Bell back together.
And it's also his stupid fucking he's got to stick himself in all this shit. You know, it'd be one thing if these sketches were actually funny. But he's got to stick himself into all of them. He's got to have a rock star on, and then he's got to inject himself. Like the previous thing that brutally offended me from a comedy point of view was when he jumped in with fucking Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah.
And he was doing Bruce Springsteen right next to Bruce Springsteen. And there was nothing. There was nothing insightful about it at all. It was just an imitation, which anyone can fucking do. And as someone who does, you know, I can do a few voices. But the mission is to take that voice and to do something more with it rather than just imitating the character.
Yeah, he does impressions.
Yeah. You want a good compare and contrast? Go to YouTube and watch some of Dana Carvey's impressions and see what fucking Dana Carvey would do with an impression. He would take it to a whole new fucking level.
Yeah, it would be absurd. Yes. That's the idea of an impression.
Right. And then on the other hand, you have Jimmy Fallon, who just does a straightaway right. knockoff.
Well, Fallon is a guy who thought that first of all, he's the sort of prom king comedy. That's what they called it.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who felt that he could, you know, that he should have been in a rock band. And this is his chance.
Ah, what a dickbag. Oh, hey, okay. So, have a great weekend, folks. We're going to be back with a new free show on Tuesday in addition to Thursday. That's going to start next week. Two shows a week. We're going to be launching our Patreon, so tell all your friends about that. We can't do the show without your support, and we really mean that. So make sure to listen on Tuesday and check out our Patreon page. Take care, folks. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Look, he's a moron.